Anturatma. Okay. Slide number four. Translation. Buddha said, I have studied the path of understanding self-knowledge from my spiritual master, the personality of Godhead. And thus, after circumambulating him, I have come to this place, very much aggrieved due to separation. So, of course, in perspective, Vidura is approaching Uddhava to get some enlightenment. And he's first asking about the background. How's family? Who's alive? Who's dead? What's happened? You know? And then, how's Krishna? What's Krishna doing? Because that's all that matters, really. Either directly or indirectly, Krishna is our life. And so then Uddhava comes to the point of describing the disappearance of everybody, and Krishna's taking shelter of a small banyan tree and sitting there very beautifully, and then Uddhava approached him, and then Krishna was instructing Uddhava in Maitreya with a very submissive and smiling attitude. Also came, you know, although he was still contaminated by the idea of monism, which would seem very strange, you know, if you're going to be right there in the presence of Krishna and still be contaminated with some kind of perspective of monism, very subtle disease. So then, it's describing that Uddhava then asked Krishna to tell him the four verses that he taught to Brahma. But in response, Krishna actually taught a little more. He taught about his sthanam, his personal situation, which includes then his relationships one finds in Dwarka and Vrindavan. You know. And Maitreya was listening. And it says, for the first time, Maitreya appreciated the importance of having a personal relationship with Krishna. Yeah. So maybe again, like Sukadeva Goswami or the four Kumaras, you might see that Maitreya may have been a Brahmavadi rather than a Mayavadi. This never had a chance before. And so of course, in our preaching and our activities, in so many ways, we see, you know, this higher activity, then immediately we accept it. It's like Uddhava. Uddhava was a very, very nice person, but when he went to see the Virajbasis, he'd never seen bhakti like that. Same way Maharaj Prataparudra, when he was watching all of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya come to Puri, he was standing next to somebody, Kashi Mishra or somebody, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and he said he had never heard that kind of kirtan, because Prabhupada said, being in Puri, he would have heard many kinds of kirtan from different people, but the kirtan by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas of Lord Chaitanya, this was something very unique. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said it was him. He said that was Lord Chaitanya's unique contribution, which was kirtan in the mood of Vrindavan, very, very personal, very friendly, not so much awe and respect, but funny. And then also in the mood of the Vrijbasis, gopis, and then separation, like that. So Maitreya was appreciating Uddhava's relationship with Krishna and Krishna's reciprocation with him. And then he tells Vidura that after I studied all this with Krishna, this is very much then this is what happened. Verse. Then I took off. And I circumambulated him, may have come to this point. Okay, so now it's Prabhupada's purport. Slide number five. Okay, please excuse the noise. We've got the fan going because it's really hot, very hot here. I don't think it's hotter than hell, but it's probably heading that way. And of course, always this continuous traffic, so I'll try and talk clearly and loudly. Sri Uddhava's actual life is the direct symbol of the Chatu Shloki Bhagavatam enunciated first to Brahmaji by the personality of Godhead. Okay. And of course, that's Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9, 33 through 36. It's 34, 35, 36. So second canto, 9th chapter, and 3 times 3 is 9. A little mnemonic device. 3 times 3 is 9. 2.9, 33. Prabhupada says, these four very great and important verses from Srimad Bhagavatam are particularly taken out by the Mayavadi speculators who construe a different purport to suit their impersonal view of monism. Here is the proper answer to such unauthorized speculators. Okay, next slide, number six. Slide number six. The verses of Srimad Bhagavatam are purely theistic science, understandable by the postgraduate students of Bhagavad Gita. The unauthorized, dry speculators are offenders at the lotus feet of the Supreme, of Lord Sri Krishna, because they distort the purports of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam to mislead the public and prepare a direct path to the hell known as Andha Tamishra. Andha Tamishra. So Prabhupada pointing out here that they're not only like, ignorant, but they, in this case, you know, later on, I looked it up, and the hell known as Andha Tamishra, it's in, of course, in the fifth canto, it says Tamishra and Andha Tamishra. And Andha means egg or darkness, and Tamishra also means darkness. So it says that one goes there by slyly cheating people and enjoying their wives and children. Yes, yeah. And then when he's taken to this hell, he suffers so much on the way there that he loses his intelligence and becomes blind on the way there. And therefore, it's known as Andha Tamishra. Of course, if we have some intelligence, then we can tolerate different kinds of disturbances and distress and torture. But if we lose our intelligence and we just totally fall into the thing and just become like dithering animals or children, you know, lost in the experiences that are being delivered to us, of being tortured and relieved and, you know, and tempted, you know, and so on. So our intelligence is lost and we become blind like that. You know? So it's a very, very severe suffering. And of course, maybe somebody is not like grossly stealing a wife to indulge in sense gratification, employing her feminine charms for having nice, comfortable eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, nice ornaments, you know, nice flattery, and engaging one's other sons and daughters and also serving one and collecting and doing all these things. But one can create an environment, you know, by becoming false guru and all these things. Well, yes, well, all these things are being used in one's service. You know, all the wives and children of all your different followers, you know, are being engaged in your service because you are distorting the purports of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, and mislead the public and prepare a direct path to the hell known as Andha Tamishra. Yeah. And we can talk about this more later. Okay. Prabhupada says, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 16.20, such envious speculators are without knowledge and are surely condemned life after life. But these are actually, you know, not just people who are Brahma bodies, it seems like, but people who know the truth and that they hate Krishna, and therefore they establish you know, an impersonal environment, impersonal philosophy and culture. They unnecessarily take shelter of Sripad Shankaracharya. Okay. So now Prabhupada will talk about this theme for quite some time here. Because actually one person we were dealing with, he was a lawyer, and he was a long time ago, maybe 1985 or something. After Prabhupada left, so 1982 or something, you know. And he was a very, very intellectual guy. And he was dealing quite a few times with cults and with them. And he said many times what happened was that the person who was really responsible for it wasn't the figurehead. It's kind of like what's it called, the Cain Mutiny. The Cain Mutiny, very famous story. That the person who was responsible for the, you know, weird philosophy, weird activities, and all these kinds of things. And sometimes, very often, of course, the leader would do something which broke the laws of ordinary morality, like having sex with younger girls or something, you know, to show he was above the law. So the person, the people most responsible were not the figurehead, the leader, but the second level people. Because the second level people could, you know, with some flattery and some manipulation of this prominent person, could enjoy, practically speaking, all the same benefits. And when the garbage hit the fan, you know, and all these problems happened, then they could slide away with just a little bit of, you know, a little bit of chastisement, and, oh, we never thought this was going on, so forth, so on. You know? So you know, when it comes to a lot of us, especially myself, whatever, we all kind of got to be very careful of this, you know. But the second level people, many times in his conclusion, were the real people that were, you know, actually responsible for the situation like that. So here Prabhupada is making this point that they unnecessarily take shelter of Shripad Shankaracharya. You know? But then it says, but he was not so drastic as to commit an offense at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Next slide, number 7. According to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sripad Shankaracharya preached the Mayavad philosophy for a particular purpose. Such a philosophy was necessary to defeat the Buddhist philosophy of the non-existence of the spirit soul, but it was never meant for perpetual acceptance. It was an emergency. So Prabhupada also says the Quran and the Bible are not eternal scriptures. They're specific Vaishnava scriptures given at a certain time, certain place, to certain people, for a certain circumstance. Okay. It was never meant for perpetual acceptance. It was an emergency. Thus, Lord Chaitanya was accepted by Shankaracharya thus Lord Krishna was accepted by Shankaracharya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his commentation on Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Since he was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, he did not dare write any commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, because that would have been a direct offense at the lotus feet of the Lord. But later, speculators, in the name of Mayavad philosophy, unnecessarily make their commentaries on the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam without any bona fide intent. Aye, they have no realistic intent. No. So these don't sound as bad as the guys who are distorting it to out of envy to directly mislead people to enjoy good food, comfortable dwelling, you know, prestige, good entertainment. Let's take all the monks to the zoo. let's take all the monks to the carnival so they can enjoy themselves. Yeah, okay. Next slide, number 8. Okay, Papa continues, the monistic dry speculators have no business in the Srimad Bhagavatam because this particular Vedic literature is forbidden for them by the great author himself. Śrīla Vyāsadeva has definitely forbidden persons engaged in religiosity, economic development, the sense gratification, and finally salvation from trying to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, which is not meant for them. Bhagavatam 1.1.2, Paramanirmatsaranam. This Bhagavatam is understandable by those who are non-envious. Shripad Sridhar Swami, the great commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, has definitely forbidden the salvationists or monists to deal in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is not for them. Yet such unauthorized persons perversely try to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, and thus they commit offenses at the feet of the Lord, which even Sripad Shankaracharya dared not do. Thus they prepare for their continuation of a miserable life. Miserable life. Okay. Next slide. Okay. So this is the first point, number 9. This is the first aspect of the purport, or the text Prabhupada's taking out, is that Uddhava, he heard the Bhagavatam, you know, from Krishna, and he heard it extensively with the Paramstiti also. You know? But his conclusion was not impersonal. And his conclusion was the exact opposite, you know. That's the first point Prabhupada making, you know. And as devotees, you know, so many of these things, I think especially in the very beginning, there was no real competition, kind of, and whatever Prabhupada said was just like, we accepted it. We weren't hearing any Mayavad philosophy, and I've heard that Prabhupada said that's why we're fortunate, that we were very much engaged in sense gratification, but we weren't confused by the Vedavata Ratas. So many things that are being presented here, this strike us as completely parallel with the Isopanishad. We're teaching that now for a little Bhakti Shastri program, and it's just so parallel, you know. If the Bhagavad Gita is ABC, then what is the Isopanishad? It's even more basic than ABC. What do you do before you do ABC? And I'm sure, you know, like that. Yeah, I guess you don't even need, I guess you just say cat, dog, mommy, milk, daddy, carry. Yeah. So Isopanishad deals with these very, very fundamental, you know, basic concepts and very, very logical, very philosophical. And for us to appreciate these at the present time, I don't think we have the patience or intelligence. So therefore, Prabhupada engaged us, you know, with good food and good music. Yeah? And yeah, and with that, creating a more sattvic atmosphere, and more coming out of the mode of ignorance, and the mode of passion, maybe sometime the mode of goodness, then we could hear, you know, logic and argument. And then first that would satisfy us and give us a good a fixed position, you know, to be able to understand and to engage our senses more, animate our hearts more. So, but in the beginning, Prabhupada's saying is just to understand that the world is not impersonal, that behind everything there is a person. Like that. Yeah. Okay. Then Prabhupada continues here, second part of the purport. It should be particularly noted herein, okay, that Uddhava studied the Chatura, Shloki, Bhagavatam, directly from the Lord, who spoke them first to Brahmaji. And this time the Lord explained more confidentially the self-knowledge mentioned as the Parang Stitim. Okay, next slide. 10. Upon learning such self-knowledge of love, Uddhava felt very much aggrieved by feelings of separation from the Lord. Upon learning such self-knowledge of love, Uddhava felt very much aggrieved by feelings of separation from the Lord. Unless one is awakened to the stage of Uddhava, everlastingly feeling the separation of the Lord in transcendental love, as exhibited by Lord Chaitanya also, one cannot understand the real import of the four essential verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's a 32-bit sentence. Let's read that one sentence again. Unless one is awakened to the stage of Uddhava, everlastingly feeling the separation of the Lord in transcendental love, as exhibited by Lord Chaitanya also, one cannot understand the real import of the four essential verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. This reminds us that Prabhupada says, Bhagavad Gita is an extremely emotional book. We don't think of it that way. Yeah. But if you're reading it and chanting it and everything else, Prabhupada says it's an extremely emotional book. And that's why sometimes maybe it doesn't seem why something goes a certain logical way, because it's being propelled by certain feelings. And so Vishwanath Chakravarti, sometimes he says that Arjuna is looking a little bit upset here and, you know, pouting. And so Krishna understands he's thinking this, and therefore Krishna says that. Also in the same line, then Prabhupada says, you cannot understand Bhagavad Gita unless you worship the deity. Not worshiping the deity. So the four essential verses, we can get some, you know, what you call it, some logical understanding like that. You know, Euclidean logic. If A equals B, then B equals C, then A equals C. If A is greater than B, if B is greater than C, then A is greater than C. And we can connect things up and make a little machine, you know, with lines and points and motors. Okay, that's the beginning of Smaranam. You know. But beyond that, of course, there are more subtle aspects to the soul. And unless the soul, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Shadika Vinaya. So unless the Nitya Siddha nature of the soul, you know, is engaged, you know, then the soul won't be convinced. The soul has to know, you know, bhakti rasa. Soul has to be experiencing this, perceiving this, knowing by direct perception, you know, and all sorts of it. It's also ever fresh, navanava yogana. You know. So we experience this. Then we're seeing, oh yeah, this is different than, you know, mathematics 1ABC, chemistry 1ABC, evolution 212. You know, this is something different. So Prabhupada says we have to become awakened to the stage of Uddhava, which is this viraha, separation from Krishna. You know? Because how can we appreciate the presence of Krishna, you know, without the separation from Krishna? You know? Now, of course, in the spiritual world, there's no time, really, as we know it. Yeah? So therefore, the separation and the yoga, the viraha and the yoga, are going on simultaneously. And they're being adjusted in a way which is tasteful. It's like, you know, if you eat some sweets, then you want to taste something bitter, you know. And you combine those, so you get more energy out of your feast, more animation to do service, to digest, to become strong. Yeah? So devotional service is nothing but one big Sunday feast. That's all there is to it. Every day is another chance to do your bhajan just the right way. You know, I'm really experiencing that. We have a lot more, independence or solitude where we are now, probably more than I ever have many times in an extended period. We have our own little dwelling with our own little yard, with our own little windows. We're fighting with the ants, you know, and the spiders. And then during the daytime, we have different equipment and trying to fight with the weather, fight with our lusty senses, you know. And there's so many ways like that, you know. But the requirement is that we have to have some kind of intelligence. Utsaha nishchaya daryat. Utsaha, intelligence, action executed in Krishna consciousness with intelligence. Without that, my gosh, you know, then how can we be enthusiastic to act locally unless we can think globally? So it has to be, my goodness, you know, it has to be this feeling of separation from Krishna. And of course, the feeling of separation from Krishna is meeting with Krishna. How can there be any separation unless you have a feeling of what it is that you're being separated from? So without that, you know, in the mood of Uddhava and Lord Chaitanya, we can't really understand the four verses. They're very simple. They were enough for Brahma, very simple. That was his whole Bhagavatam class. But he was understanding them, we could suspect, at a, you know, more and more profound level. Okay, Papa continues then. One should not indulge in the unauthorized act of twisting the meaning and thereby putting himself on the dangerous path of offense. Okay? This is kind of the end of the purport. And slide number 11, you know, here we have the have a blind monkey or something. They had a monkey, I'm not sure what it is. Some kind of weird blind mammal. Sri Upanishad. Andam tama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato buya ivate tamo ya uvidyayam rataha andatama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato buya ivate tamo ya uvidyayam rataha. It's intoxicating. Yeah. Translation. Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. So the ordinary person may, you know, drink, smoke, and fornicate. Why not, you know? But then people come along and cultivate knowledge, how you can indulge in intoxication and fornication with unbelievable extension to intensity and everything else. And so what to speak of this ordinary fool who goes to hell, you know, worse are those people who actually acquire knowledge of the material world and then manipulate it in such a fashion they create even worse karma for themselves. And of course, the ordinary person can't do this. It takes the Vedabhata Ratas or the Maya Pahita Jnanas to arrange this for them and to lead them. So for these leaders of society, oh my goodness, this kind of society is saying very, very bad future. And we were talking about this in our East Upanishad class last night because, you know, people looking at football games, now here, some of the grahastas here are, you know, watching, their children are watching some girls' World Soccer Cup, like that. Okay. And, you know, this and that in the background. And then, the commercials, I'm asking, what's the content? And they say it's so much alcohol, you know, so much eating meat, you know, and having a good vehicle. So many advertisements for the good vehicle like that. And then getting a loan from the bank for good residence, good furnishings. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's kind of the majority of the thing. So these people aren't karmis, you know. Their idea is not to go to heaven, to go to the moon planets and all these kind of things that Prabhupada's talking about. which Muhammad talks about. The Quran talks about. Everybody talks about this, going to heaven. And the Vedas, of course, give much more explicit details. But the modern instance is it doesn't even apply. Most of the Prabhupada's purports don't even apply to most people in this sense, because their idea is to create heaven on earth. If I have good vehicle, good mate, convenient, Prabhupada says, an obliging wife, a good residence, some prestige and honor and service from others, the gratification of my mind, a pleasant residence, and sporting activities, like that. Then what's happened? And I think, I can be happy on earth, heaven on earth. But of course, there's suffering, actually. And it can really, if we're not envious, then it can really go on only so long as we don't see the alternative. As soon as we see the alternative, then it really causes problems for us. Many times, people, maybe ourselves, when we saw the devotees, and who was the devotee? Dhananjaya, a good friend there, I saw him in Spain. He said the first time he saw the devotees, they were chanting, they were across the street, maybe Fisherman's Wharf or something in San Francisco. And he said it was like they came from a different world. It was so powerful looking and so, pure. And he said he was even afraid to approach them. So he kind of like joked and told his girlfriend to go get one of the books they were selling, like that. So she went over and got a book. So other people, many times they just can't handle it. They just shut it out. They become angry and stuff because they know it's what they want and everything else. But the Vedavata Ratas, they know the Vedas, they claim to know the Vedas, they claim to know science and so many things. And they lead these people, and so then the future becomes extremely terrible in terms of Anda Tamishra. So quite a variety of people. And again, these are very, very simple, basic ideas, but next text here, number 12. But here is the actual Bhagavatam. If you look at it, this is 33-36. Krishna says, Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead. Aham evastam evadre nanyadya sarasa param. Pashad vitam ravishishet shosmi aham. It is I, the personality of Godhead, who existed before the creation when there was nothing but myself. Nowhere is there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. In the next verse, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, and here the word is not mam or aham, the word is atma, atma, atmane. No relationship to me, has no reality. Know it as my atma, illusory energy, my atma, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So here maybe there's some weasel possibilities because it says atma. But it usually Radhika Raman Dardas there and Krishna Kshetra there, he was telling me usually when you look at the actual formation of the words, the real natural translation really is that Atma here is Krishna's talking about himself, and even more intimately we've seen than before hum, maybe even the word here Atma is more intimate even than to say a hum or mom. Maybe we get some comments from our audience on that. Well, Brahma, please know the universe or elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself, and here it is myself, it's a hum, also exists within everything created. At the same time, I am outside of everything. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, all space-time, both directly and indirectly. And before this, Krishna says, be enlightened by my mercy about my form and all these things like that. So I've heard that Shankaracharya didn't make his comments because, one, yes, it would have been direct offense to Krishna. And the second thing was that it would have been obviously stupid. So even with a little bit of Sanskrit knowledge, if you look at these things For example, we were in the Bay Area. Where were we? I guess it was San Francisco. Oh, yeah, we're staying in Sacramento, visiting one of our friends, Chimanbhai Patel. He was very, very nice fellow. Every day with his wife, he would chant Bhagavad Gita, and he would really, preach against Mayavadi philosophers. Maybe someplace else. But anyway, there was one Mayavadi sannyasi there, Shankara sannyasi, giving lectures at one Indian cultural center. And before he'd been a big professor of mathematics at the university, and he took sannyas and so forth, so on. So he went there, and he was lecturing on these verses. On these verses, like that, And so I was sitting there in my sannyas dress and everything else, and he nodded to me respectfully and gave his lectures, and there was nothing to complain about, And then afterwards, when I left, our host, the Indian fellow, was kind of chuckling. He said his lecture sure was different than the one last night. And so just, I mean, the guy was, in terms of Sanskrit learning, moral purity, everything else, he could have annihilated me, kind of like, again, like, King Kong versus Donald Duck or something, in terms of my ability to argue with him about the content. But we could have actually just very simply just pointed out that Krishna is talking to Brahma and he's saying aham in a very simple sense. So the Bhagavatam is so clear that any kind of other interpretation, it just looks, even a child, can see that it's stupid, and so on. So it's kind of our comments. The only other thing we were thinking about this is that, okay, maybe we understand this, and maybe we're on the right path, In the Isopanishad, Prabhupada says you have to hear this from a dira. He defines dira to a large degree two things. He's coming in parampara, and he's following the four principles, like that, And so that eliminates a lot of problems, And maybe we're going to make small deviations, but definitely we're on the right road. If we're hearing from somebody who's following the four principles and is delivering the message in parampara, like that, So, but we can accelerate the process. Upadeshamrita describes six things we're trying to do. Vacha-vegam, manasa-krodha-vegam. We try to engage our senses in the service of the master of the senses. But then it describes how to accelerate the process. And maybe that's our level. Our level is not that we're becoming purified, we're headed in the right direction, and we have to start moving faster, accelerate our senses. So then texts 2 and 3 then talk about that, things to avoid and things to cultivate, in terms of advancing, So those are also nice kind of topic for discussion here. But basically that's our basic thoughts about this verse and this section. It's very nice, and very nice talking to a learned audience here. So if anybody has any comments then, questions?
Mars, I need a moment. Just a moment.
Star 5.
Okay. There, I've done it. I've unmuted everybody.
My God.
Excuse me.
Damn tobacco.
No. Does anyone have anything they'd like to add?
Anybody?
Maharaj.
Yeah. Who's this?
Madan Mohan Das. Das.
Haribol.
Haribol, glorious Prabhupada. I've also thought about that 10:47, 29 verse where Uddhava is bringing the message to the gopis, and he says that we're never actually separated. And it appeared to me on that verse that he was talking about kind of like the 2:9:35 part about that he's in everything, he's not in everything. And there's kind of a long explanation on that verse about how the gopis first thought that he was talking to them about jnana, and then went on and on. And it seemed to me that that was the continuation of the same idea that Uddhava and Lord Brahma's, the four nutshell verses, and the more confidential part about the relationship. What do you think on that? point if you thought about it.
Well, no, and I think it's, you know, Gopi Puranadhan and Hiradana Maharishi's commentary, right? They have Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary.
Yeah, that's right.
And also the prayers at Rathayatra, Radharani says the same thing. He says, you're trying to teach us this monism that, you know, everything is you and you're everything, so we're never separated from you, like that. We shouldn't think that. But he said, but this, you know, before you had Uddhava trying to teach this to us, you know, and we should always fix our minds upon you, and we'll become peaceful. We should do pranayama, something, you know, and become, and give up our, become free from stress. But this is ludicrous, you know, so on. When you talk about these things, the gopis don't become pleased with you, they become more angry at you. You know? So that's the one perspective that, in some perspective, I think it's true, you know, and so it's maybe more like the ambience for them, the Krishna's taste in water, okay. But the real thing for them, and Prabhupada says that in the next few verses, the devotees, the foreground then is Krishna Katha, the background is separation, but the foreground is ever and ever more expert and delicate Krishna Katha, and so, and which leads to Lila Smarnam, like that. Just every kind of what I would think, you know.
So I gave the class the other day, 2 days ago, and just the verses before this, and then we were noticing, I think Nahari asked a question about how does, about being aloof. There's a couple of verses in the Bhagavad Gita talks about those who are in divine consciousness are aloof from the activities of the senses. So it appears that there's something else going on, even though they're engaged in the activities of this world, their consciousness is someplace else. So it seemed like that's leading the way to this the service and separation. And
I guess the word aloof probably comes like Lufthansa or Luftwaffe. It means air force or above, like that in sky. I would say, it's like a Hanuman. Hanuman was running around in Ravana's harem, and the description is really incredible, you know, of all these half-naked beauties and all this kind of, you know, sensuous stuff. And Hanuman says, my God, what am I doing? My gosh, I'm a brahmachari. This is, you know? Then he says, but it's the intention which makes something simple, not the act itself. And he said, if you're going to look for a woman, then you've got to go where there are women. Yeah. So if we go out and sense gratification, we dress up in a certain way, we talk to people, we maybe eat some, you know, something in their company. No. But it's the motivation. Yeah. And the more our motivation becomes intense, the more, even though we're engaged in the sense object, the more we're aloof from them. We become more and more expert in using all these things in Krishna's service. So devotees become more expert at using the material nature than the karmis. You know, they produce stuff that, you know, do things that even the karmis are amazed at, you know, and stuff like that. You know? But the more they do that, the more they become aloof because they're doing it and getting the potency because they're doing it for Krishna. Yeah, so simultaneously attached and detached, yeah? The two are related.
The thing that came into my mind just recently was this, the verse 3:26. We just did this one not too long ago, where the great devotee Uddhava soon came back to the abode, from the abode of the Lord to the human plane, and wiping his eyes, he awakened his remembrance of the past and spoke to Vidura in a pleasing mood. And in this purport, Prabhupada explains how you can... how do you say it? Even though a pure devotee is present on this mortal planet, he is here in relationship to Lord for engagement in transcendental loving service, not for any material cause. It's like you're pointing out, what's the intention? And it says, a living entity can live either on the material plane or the transcendental abode of the Lord in accordance with his existential condition. And then he goes through the whole thing on the Bhakti Lata Beach, explaining how you can be still in this material world but actually be in the spiritual world. And that purport there, I'm just kind of skimming it right now, looking for where he mentions it specifically. But that's how, let's see, where is it? Says a devotee gardener is in touch with the abode of the Lord, even from the material plane, by dint of his performing devotional service to the Lord, simply by hearing and chanting. And so in that purport, he explains that, how he can be here and at the same time there. And, of course, you translate the Bhakti Lata Bija in this verse as the taste, that how your taste grows all the way out of the material world, all the way to the lotus feet of Krishna, where those nine different transformations of adoshana, sadasanga, bhajana, kriya are a relationship to your taste for doing devotional service. If you're past, the taste is free from material anarthas, and if it's got the emotion, bhava or prema in it. So I just thought that was an interesting way to connect these three different verses.
Yeah, one thing I keep noticing when we're teaching these things, we're going to, Bhakti Shastri and now Bhakti Bhai Bhava, is that there aren't that many concepts in some ways. It isn't like this one new concept after another. It's like the same basic ideas, but like from different perspectives, and you fit them together, and so you can preach to different kinds of people, and then finally you find, deal with your own problems like that. So there's so many parallel references and stuff like that, And here, Prabhupada especially seems to be talking about the basic, Upanishadic level. But now we're on one of Krishna, the first two cantos of Krishna's lotus feet, and the third canto and fourth are Krishna's legs. So we got above his feet. Now we're looking at his legs here, massaging his legs. Okay, but still, a very, very fundamental relationship.
I've also thought about it that same way, that right from the beginning in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna tells him to Arjuna, he has to learn how to tolerate not being affected by the duality of this world, so he can get through it to be in relationship to him, and asnute comes up over and over again, that there's a taste of understanding your Brahman, there's a taste of understanding what devotional services and material nature side by side, you can get the taste there. And it keeps, this word taste just keeps coming up all and over and over again. He enjoys this relationship. He sees, just like, was that at 1.7.4, where he sees Maya behind Krishna. So he sees the Maya and he sees Krishna, and he doesn't get distracted by the Maya. And if you're not distracted by the Maya, the only thing that's there is Krishna. Krishna is everything else. He's the Maya too, but it's in relationship to Krishna. It's Krishna's Maya.
In the introduction to his translation of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, David Happerman, professor there, he has a really incredible history of rasa shastras and everything else like that. So he says that actually the word rasa, it appears in the Upanishads, and it says that actually rasa is everything. Interesting, taste. That everything is ultimately a matter of good taste. Even like geometry, you mentioned like Euclidean geometry, maybe the most logical formation of ideas and science and the basic. You learn it in school, geometry. But the axioms and postulates, about what is the point, all these kind of things, where do those come from? Well, they're there because they feel right. That's what it comes down to. Feel correct. Yeah. So ultimately, rasa, you're saying, rasa is the basis of everything.
It's a cultivated taste, right? It's an acquired taste.
Yeah, you can cultivate your garden. You can cultivate beets, or you can cultivate carrots. If you cultivate carrots, you'll attract bears. If you cultivate beets, the bears won't come around. So I guess that's when we're coming to the point of Raga Nuga Bhakti, huh? When we come to Ruchi, come to Ruchi, and we can cultivate it, which Ruchi we think is better. And then maybe that's where we start to come to Raga Nuga Bhakti. Raga Nuga.
What's that? Akila Rasam Amrita Murti.
Yeah.
That form.
Some like it cold, some like it hot, some like it in the pot, 9 days old.
I was going to say that was amazing, the point that you had made, how in the Chaturshloki verse 34, when it says Atmani and Atmana, I was also thinking that that wouldn't be as direct as aham. Aham seems very, very clear. But so you're pointing out that Atmani, Atmana, that's even a more clear referring to his personality?
Well, I was hoping for our great Oxford scholars to come online here. Radhikuraman, Chachetra, Krishna Smarnam. Come on. Yeah, but a great Sanskrit knowledge. But that's what I was suspecting, that you say it is, because Atma, you know, is you know, that's the self. That's a very intimate self, in that sense. Yeah. I am. It made it to be more kind of I am, but you know, my soul is even more intimate, like that, and so on. Yeah. So that's what, you know. But this was just my speculation, philosophical speculation, looking for confirmation from an authority.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking as you were reading the purport how when Srila Prabhupada says that in order to understand these verses, you have to feel the separation from the Lord. Otherwise, you can't enter into them. And I was just thinking, I'll have to admit that these four verses don't impact me very much. You know, like, for instance, we chant the invocation prayers, and it's, you know, Nastra Prayeshu, Abhijeshu, those kind of verses. Even the first verse, the first, second, third verses of Bhagavatam, for me personally, has a more impact than the Chaturshloki verses. But I suppose that's because we have no viraha.
Yeah. I guess, like, you know, somebody hasn't seen her husband for, you know, 3 months. She's been traveling overseas, and finally comes home, and she's there with her sister and her mother and her cousin to receive them at the airport or something like that, so forth, so on, you know. And she can't see him. There's some confusion, and somebody comes over, some employee, and says, "Oh, madame, there's one gentleman standing over there looking for you." Okay, it's just a gentleman, you know. But, yeah, she looks and it's her husband. Yeah. And so it's the same way, is that when Krishna says aham, you know, okay, that's all you need. It's that word. All Krishna says it is I. Okay, you know. Yeah. And so when we're in any circumstance, like, you know, it's hot. And I'm walking back and forth now in my kitchen here to get a little breeze going. Yeah, it's hot. But then we think that's Krishna. We see that's Krishna. How Krishna's having a relationship with it, then it's not a matter of tolerating. It's a matter of, you know, understanding what he's doing, what he's feeling, why he's acting this way, yeah, so on. Yeah, so this is, you know, so the four verses, like, I think, are real fundamental. But again, the Prabhupada says, and everybody understands them, you know, in a more intense fashion. It's Upanishad, same thing. So one understands that Krishna's everywhere. What is the possibility of fear? Or envy of him. You know, we're afraid of different things, but if we see that everything is just Krishna playing with us, the tiger, the robber at night, you know, all these things. You see Krishna, then we're no longer afraid. It's just like our parents playing with us. Yeah. I guess I should go, because actually I'm supposed to try and meet with Ram Giridhari before he goes to bed. It's at 10:30. Is it 10:30 and something now? 9:30 in India. We're trying to work on this symposium, education symposium, at the end of July, you know, in Houston, and trying to get something together, because there's a lot of educational things going on, like this regular class program, or our Shastric education, our K through 12 education, you know, and our higher education in the universities. Pranadas, he's one of the people involved a lot, very nice devotee. He was saying it's almost like all we have to do now is just connect the dots. You know, Krishna, Bhante school, this and that, everything else. And then, of course, what do you see when you connect the dots? We're almost ready to the point where we can really, for example, get our own school going in North America and stuff like that, and just to have our own, we can teach teaching from our perspective. And the thing is, to produce teachers who are not only like, you know, Hare Krishna teachers, Hare Krishna school teachers, but any outside school would love to have them as their teachers. And any decent school would love to have these people coming out of these schools as their teachers like that. Yeah. Okay, so thank you all very much.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
Jai.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. Hare Bol.
Hare Bol.
Mm-hmm.